Hi, this is Dr. Eleanor Barbera of My Better Nursing Home, and I'm here with Dr. Robin Boniface, Assistant Professor at the School of Social Work at Arizona State University, to talk about how organizations can intervene to prevent senior bullying. Dr. Boniface, along with her colleague, Marcia Frankel, Clinical Director of Senior Services at Jewish Family and Children's Services in Boston, Massachusetts, have written a series of blog posts on senior bullying featured at My Better Nursing Home. Dr. Boniface, thanks for joining us, and welcome.
Well, thank you.
You tell me what got you interested in conducting research on senior bullying?
Well, it came out of another research project that I'm doing that has to do with resident-to-resident aggression in nursing homes. And as I was preparing to launch that research project, I was contacted by, a reporter who was actually doing a piece on senior bullying, and it was a reporter here in Arizona for the Arizona Republic, which is our main newspaper, and she'd contacted the university wanting to talk with someone who had some knowledge in that area, and the closest person that they could find was me with my research in resident-to-resident aggression. So I did an interview with that reporter, and we kind of linked resident-to-resident aggression along a continuum of aggressive behavior or problem behavior among seniors, with senior bullying being kind of on the, I don't want to say less problematic, but usually with senior bullying, there's less physical aggression, and it's more of a relational aggression in the ways that people interact with each other socially and relationship-wise, as opposed to, actual hitting and kicking, which is what the resident-to-resident aggression is about. So basically, in a nutshell, it grew out of my work in resident-to-resident aggression, learning about this other type of behavior that's quite problematic as well.
Right, certainly. And I actually had looked online, and I didn't see that much on senior bullying, even though I had people contacting me through my blog and wondering, you know, if I knew more about it. So I was very glad to see your work on the subject. And the focus of our talk today is really for organizations to try to help them get some more details about what they can do to prevent senior bullying within the organization. And I was wondering, within a nursing home or an assisted living environment, who's most likely to notice the senior bullying? Whose attention is it usually brought to?
Well, it does vary from place to place, but I think it's most often noticed by other residents. And it's most often noted by people who are with the residents a lot. So that's typically your direct care staff, folks that are involved in running the activity programs, housekeeping. So those types of positions who are with the residents a lot. And just to mention, in my research that I've done in assisted living, we interviewed 30 people, and virtually all of them, you know, had either experienced bullying or what they perceived to be bullying themselves, or had witnessed it occurring to one of their peers. So they definitely notice it going on.
Yeah, it's interesting because when I was reading some of the information that you put in your blog post, I realized that there was a lot more bullying than I had really thought about being bullying. I remember working with a man in another nursing home who would complain loudly and call the other residents' names. And I don't think we really thought of it as bullying, but more like this guy is depressed and he needs some help for that, but we didn't really address the bullying aspect of it and its impact on the other residents.
Yeah, it's a good point. And when you look at the definition of bullying, which has been developed for, it came out of the youth bullying literature, and it's an intentional, repetitive behavior that causes distress in others. And what I'm finding in my research is that bullying may be a little bit different in the senior population, where it may not necessarily be repetitive. We've had incidents where someone has been exposed one time to some really negative behavior and, you know, quite traumatized by that. And then when I did my interviews with the 30 people, you know, they talked about feeling bullied even though the behavior that they described didn't necessarily fit that academic definition of bullying, which I think is very interesting. I mean, how do we define it? Do we define it by the academic definition, or do we define it by the person experiencing the behavior? Do they feel that they're being bullied? And I guess my point is that whatever we do from an intervention perspective, we need to take into account that behavior that is distressing to other people, whether it fits the definition of bullying or not, if they feel like they're being bullied, it's something that we need to take steps to try to improve the situation.
Yes, I agree. And I would also say that the things that we might see as bullying, as people that are most likely able-bodied and walking around, might be different than some coming from a perspective of somebody who's sitting in a wheelchair and not able to move themselves out of the way. So they might feel more vulnerable and perceive bullying that we might not see.
Yeah, that's a very good point. You know, if I'm in a public area and somebody is doing something that's just disruptive or distressing to me, I can just walk away.
Right.
Not everybody has that ability.
Right. Exactly. So you were saying that the people that are most likely to notice the senior bullying are those that are closest to the residents, spending the most time with them. So what if somebody listening to this is part of the administration, and how, if they are not hearing, if the administration is not hearing about bullying, can they assume that it's not a problem?
No. I would err on the side of caution and assume that it is occurring and that you're just not hearing about it. And if you think about in the school environment where we first started studying bullying, I'm sure that bullying occurs on every playground in the entire country. And I'm thinking like 20 years ago. The principal may not have ever heard about it, or even some of the teachers, because it just wasn't talked about. And it was sort of the idea that, well, kids will be kids and this is how they behave, and there's you know, that's just the way it is and nothing can be done. And we're kind of at that same stage now with looking at bullying in older adults, that not
mm-hmm.
necessarily recognizing it as a problem, and it's often seen as more, oh, that's just the way people are. So we don't tend to talk about things if they haven't been recognized as a problem. So anyway, what I'm trying to say is, just because you haven't heard about it, or the administrator or director hasn't heard about it, doesn't mean it's not occurring. It just means they haven't heard about it.
So how would they find out about it? How would they go about trying to find out if something is going on?
It's a matter of talking to people and finding out what their experience is. And it could be talking with direct care workers to see if they observed anything. And it's probably not helpful to say, hey, have you seen people being bullied? Because people may not know what that means. It may be better to ask about, hey, are people treating others respectfully? Is there anything going on in the dining room or during activities or in the hallway that seems to be distressing to people or that you're concerned about? So kind of put it in that way. And then I also think talking to the residents themselves about, I know in my research we framed it, you know, rather than asking, hey, is bullying going on here? We ask, are there behaviors going on between the people that live here that make you feel uncomfortable or cause you to be distressed or those types of things? So getting to the feelings behind the behaviors and the things that are going on.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
So it could be something that might be worked into like a resident satisfaction survey, something like that. Just asking the question and putting it out there would be a way of highlighting it as a potential issue and getting some information about how often it's happening.
Yeah, that would be a really good way to get at that information, to just ask it with the other types of questions you would ask to determine satisfaction.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like you're suggesting that it's probably going on, so it's better to assume that it is going on and than it is to assume that it's not going on.
Yes, that's would be my recommendation, to err on the side of caution that it's
okay.
Happening.
Okay. And so let's say, now that we've been talking about the administration trying to, you know, better their organization and trying to address this, but what if somebody that's listening to this is a line staff person who is maybe seeing some bullying going on their floor, their unit that they're working on, and they want to try to address it, but the administration, the next level up person they're talking to, isn't really that open to it? Is there anything that you might suggest that they do to handle the situation?
That's always a difficult place to be in, because as a direct care person or line staff person, you don't have a lot of power to make change, which is unfortunate. And in order to have change occur, you have to have somebody in power aligned with you. So if you're going to the administrator and or director or whatever, and that person is just like kind of not really interested in the problem, it does make it quite difficult. And I would just encourage that person to find someone within the organization that they can align with, to so their voice can be heard. And that might be, it might be the, maybe it's not that person's direct supervisor, but another person in authority within the building. For example, in the nursing home, perhaps maybe the administrator isn't responsive, but maybe the activity director, who's also in a administrative type role, maybe that person could be someone to align with, or perhaps the social worker, or somebody like that, or the assistant director of nursing, someone within the organization. Or it could be, rather than one direct care worker, to have several direct care workers, to increase their voice that way by having more numbers.
I think that's a good point that, of course, it's always best if the administration, the administrator is taking the lead on it, but there's probably a lot of different staff people that could have some sort of influence in changing the culture that's in the facility.
Right.
And also I was thinking that, let's say it was an aide that was noticing that there was bullying going on, they may be able to talk to some of their coworkers about trying to make sure that within their unit or their floor, or even just among the people that they're working with, that kind of behavior doesn't occur.
Yeah, and I think, too, that, administrators and people who are in those types of positions, they're very busy, and it's important to bring the message in a way that's going to be convincing. So it probably is not going to be effective just to go into the administrator's office and say, hey, bullying's going on. This is terrible. We need to do something about it, because there's not enough evidence. But if the person can go with, hey, you know, I observed this behavior happening on Monday in the activity group. I observed this other behavior happening in the dining room on Wednesday. You know, so there's actually some quantitative evidence about what's going on and what exactly the behaviors are, and then the response of the victims of that behavior, for lack of better word. I think that can, that type of information can be more helpful.
Right. So, in other words, trying to get some incidents that occurred to be logged in a report form, perhaps.
Yeah, something like that, where it's in, it kind of captures maybe the extent of the problem and the nature of the problem. So it's going to be more an administrative person looking at that is going to be more convinced that it's a problem than if it's more of a complaint type thing. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. And so some of the facilities that I've worked in and other places have resident councils, and they may have brought up some of these things, issues that are going, as someone put, the same issues go around in circles. So do you feel like it would be beneficial to hold smaller community meetings on the different floors for the residents, or have some sort of support groups for the residents?
My thoughts on that, I certainly understand what the person is talking about in terms of the resident council kind of going around and around. The ones that I've sat in on, kind of the same problems get brought up again and again, and there never seems to be any resolution. So I can understand this, like, oh, well, why would we want to, like, bring up these bullying issues in resident council? It's not going to help. I can understand where that's coming from. And my thoughts are that resident council probably isn't the place to be addressing these issues. And the reason is that resident councils are, well, they're supposed to be an avenue for residents to participate in decision making. About their life and the things going on at the facility. So, you know, planning activities and planning meals and, you know, being involved in decisions about what are important to them. It's not really, I don't know, I'm not saying every resident council, but on the whole, it's not the best place for problem solving. It's more decision making rather than problem solving. So you need a group that's a problem-solving group. And I think with resident council, that's the place for people to maybe develop some ideas for policies and procedures about bullying. You know, having them identify, here's what's important to us in terms of how we treat each other, and here's how we envision a caring community or whatever. So that would be the way that the resident council would be involved in just detailing what's important and how people should treat each other. But as like a problem-solving group or a group that actually, you know, goes and delivers consequences for problems, I don't know that that's going to work. And primarily I see it as intervening with bullying. It needs to be a partnership between residents and staff. And resident council is more for residents. So sometimes.
So you'd say, you'd suggest then maybe from the resident council or from some other meeting, getting a smaller group of interested residents that want to, say, be a part of a task force?
Yeah,
that
would be part of a problem solving group, and it wouldn't just be residents. It would need to be residents and staff working together, and you know, leadership for the group would be really key. And that's one of the difficulties with resident council. There's you can't really have a strong leader because that's not what the group is about. But this task force or whatever you want to call it, you know, neighborhood group or support group or whatever, there would need to have somebody with, you know, good leadership skills who can say, okay, here's the problem that's occurring. Let's talk about some ways to resolve it, and then let's pick a strategy we're going to use, and let's put it into place. You know, who can keep the group moving forward and actually make decisions about what they're going to do, and then come back and say, hey, how did it work? Has the behavior improved, or do we need to do something different? So a partnership between employees and residents, I think, would work better.
Well, that would be very exciting. I'm imagining a group that has residents and staff at different levels, nursing, aides, social work. If you mentioned housekeeping, I'm quite sure they see more than most people because they spend a lot of time on the floor. So would this kind of group be run most likely by a staff person, it sounds like, but one that's open to keeping an egalitarian balance between the residents and the staff?
Yeah, it would need to be somebody who, you know, has some good group skills, some good leadership skills, and it could be a resident. It just depends on, you know, the personality type and the skill type that you have. And I know that within the nursing home setting, and I'm not saying every nursing home in the country, but it seems to me that there's quite a high level of impairment that can inhibit them from really engaging in consistent leadership. Does that make sense? I think they can participate.
When you say impairment, oh, you mean among the residents?
Among the residents, yes.
Right.
Yes. I don't mean that the staff is impaired, but the residents in nursing homes have significant cognitive impairment. They have if they don't have cognitive impairment, it's physical impairment. You know, they're a high acuity population, and it can be difficult to provide for one of them to provide consistent leadership when they're also struggling with those types of conditions. So they can participate in leadership, but it would probably be fairly rare where you would find a resident who could really lead independently a group like that. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, because they may be also experiencing health crises at different points. And
right.
They
need to have their voice heard and to be involved. But I think to rely on them to actually lead and pull off something like this, I think that would not be wise. At the same time, I don't think it should be a staff member who's very, you know, dictatorial and that type of stuff, because then you would have your, like, bullying task force being led by bullies.
Yeah.
So you don't want that either. So, yeah, somebody
no.
who is more egalitarian, like you said. And,
right.
and people can learn leadership skills, so that's something to think about, too.
Absolutely. Okay, so here's a thought. Would you include, let's say, family members in this task force, or would you think that would be something that should be kept separate from the residents and the staff?
Well, it's probably up to the facility and how they feel about that. I guess my thoughts are that people in the group really need to feel open and honest to talk about what's happening and their feelings about it. And it could be that some people may feel uncomfortable being brutally honest with family members there. And for some organizations, that might not be a problem, but for others, it could be. So.
Okay, sure. I guess there's always HIPAA considerations. and bringing up issues.
Yeah,
but
that's true, because you would be talking about, like, say that I was part of a task force at my mother's care home. I would be hearing all the information about other people's conditions and problems and behaviors, and I don't know that that's a good thing. And you wouldn't want to have to censor what you were talking about in the group, if that makes sense.
Sure, sure. But so it wouldn't necessarily be a consideration for the residents then, because they're in the facility and they are seeing what's going on. Maybe they'd have to set up some guidelines in terms of not giving specifics, but just talking about general behaviors that are being seen in
right,
order to include
right.
the residents without violating
right.
HIPAA. Right.
And usually the residents themselves wouldn't have information about, like, what's in their peers' medical record. So they're not going to divulge, oh, well, you know, she has a diagnosis of blah, 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 blah.
Right.
But the staff might have that. So, I mean, that would need to be something that it's one thing to talk about behaviors and this is what's happening and this is how I feel about it. But it's another thing to talk about, well, you know, so-and-so has such a this certain diagnosis and it's a anniversary reaction of the death of their daughter. And, you know, they just had their Haldol increased. You know, you don't want to, that's not the type of, that's for like a care planning conference
right.
where you wouldn't be talking about that type of thing within this task force. It would be more about, here's what's happening, and here's some ideas of what we can do. And if a staff member had concerns that perhaps a diagnosis was contributing to the behaviors, you know, they can just kind of make a note of that and just mention, you know, I wonder if there's something else that might be going on with this person. I will consult with the care team about this. So you can, you know, just mention that without going into details about
Right, exactly. And you bring up a good point, which is that if the residents are identifying bullying behavior that's going on, not only can it be addressed within the task force about how to address bullying in general, but the person doing the bullying might have specific needs that need to be care planned and addressed by the staff
right,
individually,
right.
separate from the task force.
Right.
So you were mentioning diagnosis, and so that there is the question about bullying that involves people with dementia, because as you had written in the blog post, that they may have certain sorts of behaviors that may be bullying or perceived as bullying. Do we handle people with dementia differently? And if so, how do we manage that?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. And we do want to approach people with dementia differently. And let me talk a little bit about why that is. When you look at the straight definition of bullying, it's about intentional behavior. It's about gaining power over others, about controlling the environment, and those types of things. And with dementia, we have to remember that there's cognitive deficits. And with those cognitive deficits, there's communication deficits. There's difficulty making sense of the environment and what's going on. And often what happens with people who are demented is that they misinterpret benign events as threatening. And they've lost a lot of their skills that people without dementia have, their ability to negotiate and talk things through and those types of things. And so they react with more primitive type behaviors, you know, yelling at another person, pushing another person, kind of getting in their face type of thing. And it's not so much that they're trying to gain control over others or power over others to, you know, make others small so they'll be big. It's more about them feeling threatened and trying to protect themselves. So there's a different motive going on, if that makes sense. Somebody who doesn't have dementia and is kind of doing these bullying things, it's more about their response to a lack of control, loss, all that type of stuff, and they try to get that control by just being domineering over others, whereas people with dementia are just trying to protect themselves and make sense out of an environment that's scary to them.
Okay. So let's say that's the case, but some of the recommendations you said were to have set sort of rules for behaviors, rules and expectations for behavior. Mm-hmm. But if you have a resident with dementia that's violating those rules completely unintentionally because of their dementia, how would we handle that in a community setting when one person that's cognitively intact would be expected to adhere to the rules and then another person is, you know, not following those rules at all? How can we manage that?
Yeah, that's a very difficult situation. And, you know, having the rules and expectations is more appropriate for, like, an assisted living situation,
mm-hmm.
where people are more cognitively intact and the extent of dementia isn't as pervasive, and the dementia that is there is early stages where people can still remember the rules,
mm-hmm.
and expectations. And by the time somebody's in the nursing home, you can have the rules spray painted everywhere, and that is not going to help somebody with dementia because they don't have memory. At most 5 minutes, it's just not going to work. Well, remember the rules, you know, no hitting and screaming. I mean, that's not going to be helpful. So it's more of the types of approaches that we would use for behavioral management. It's changing the environment and making sure that the environment increases the safety, feelings of safety for that person, and trying to manage their behavior. If they're very, if they seem to be pushing in the hallway when it's crowded, you know, you're trying to arrange things so things are a bit more open and they're not, you know, getting stuck in a bottleneck. You're monitoring what's going on. So your more traditional behavior management type things are what you're going to be doing with that person.
I see. So it's almost that at a certain point with dementia, then the staff in the facility has to take responsibility for the behaviors more than the person with dementia. In other words, we as staff people have to create an environment that doesn't cause them to act out in bullying type behavior, even though
right, and it does become more of a staff responsibility, and it's not easy, you know, because you have to figure out what's contributing to the behavior. What is it that's causing them to do whatever it is they're doing? A lot of times, what happens with people who are have dementia and they're still ambulatory is that they wander into other people's rooms. And I don't know why it is, but they always seem to wander into people's rooms who are cognitively intact and who are very, offended and frightened by the behavior. And it's not going to be helpful to tell that wandering person, oh, stop wandering, don't go in there. You know, we have to do something to keep that from happening. And I'm sure listeners are very much aware of those different types of interventions that are done to not only reduce wandering but reduce the distress associated with somebody wandering into your room when you don't want it. You know, that the Velcro barriers and the idea of a special care unit where wanderers are there, and they can wander at will, and it's not going to bother anybody. Those types of things.
Right. And also perhaps maybe along with the idea of talking about acceptable behaviors, ways for the cognitively intact residents to handle residents that are engaging in this behavior without becoming angry or yelling or violent.
Right.
Because
right.
I've seen
helping
that happen.
To understand what's going on, and you know that person really isn't out to get you. They just have a condition that makes them confused, and they don't realize this isn't their room. So helping them understand, and then you know how they can cope with that in a productive way.
Right. So speaking of having the staff take on some sorts of responsibility, not with regard to people with dementia, but for their own behavior, some of the things that you mentioned as being bullying, one of the things you said was being bossed around. And when I was reading that, I was thinking about how sometimes a staff member might say something like, no, you can't go to bed, it's time for lunch. Or, you know, no, you can't eat that if a resident's trying to eat something that might not be good for their health. There's certain things that a staff member might do that might be perceived as bullying by the resident. And I wonder, you know, if we're addressing resident bullying, how do we work that if the staff are doing things that might be seen as bullying?
Yeah, that's a very good point, because it's not acceptable to say, well, this group of people, you can't bully, but this other group of people bullies all the time, and that's okay. You know, you want to have the same message, and the same treatment is going to work better from that perspective. And that's part of the reason for the organizational approach, which is, making changes at the organizational level that help prevent bullying. And for a culture change, organizational change to occur, the key there is that everyone has to be involved in the change. So it can't just be some people have to behave a certain way and other people don't. So the expectations are that everyone here needs to treat one another respectfully. So that can be helping staff to learn better ways of communicating. And, you know, you can say, no, you can't eat that. You know, give me that. You know, which is going to probably be perceived as being bullied by the resident. Or you can phrase it in a different way. You know, oh, I know that you really want to eat that cookie, Mrs. Jones, but remember what Dr. Smith said about your diabetes and really wanting you to limit that kind of stuff. How about if we have our, I hate it when you have, we have, how about if you have this other, you know, and then offering something that's within the diet plan. I mean, that is, I mean, they're still probably not going to, not like it, you know, being told what they can eat and what they can't eat, but at least it's presented in a more gentle manner.
Right. So that sort of thing would be discussed in staff trainings and reinforced through the supervisors and things like that, of ways of handling
situations. Just helping them, you know, role-playing different types of ways to communicate respectfully. And staff are often in a position that they have to set limits with residents, and helping them learn how to do that in a positive, respectful way. I mean, that's a great skill to learn.
Absolutely. Comes in handy.
Yeah.
Saves a lot of problems in the long run. So you had mentioned quite a few different interventions for that organizations can engage in to reduce or prevent bullying. Is there anything that you wanted to discuss in any more detail? Like, for example, you said about challenges about communal living and having group discussions. Would that be the task force, or was there some other forum that you were thinking of, that sort of thing?
No, not really. I just see it as something that both residents and staff need to work together on, and then it's something that needs to be embraced by everyone in the organization, because what happens is if just a few people try to make change, those people who maybe aren't on board with it or don't agree with it, well, they tend to sabotage things, and then it's not as effective. So if everybody can embrace the idea of trying to create a caring community, and again, recognizing that people with dementia are not going to be able to do that. You know, we can't expect somebody with dementia to do things that they're not capable of. But at the same time, what can we do as an organization to help things feel more safe and comfortable for them?
Certainly. And there are many, many residents in the nursing homes who don't have dementia or have early stages of dementia that would really benefit from this discussion and identifying the behaviors.
Yeah.
One of the things you said, you had an idea about a caring squad, which I thought was great, that you said, institute a caring squad whose job it is to notice acts of kindness and reward them. Have you seen this at work in any facilities? Can you say a little bit more about that?
Yeah, just my thoughts about that is that you need to come at it from both sides. So on the one hand, you need to work towards reducing bullying or negative behavior or whatever you want to call it, disrespectful treatment of one another, so reducing it. But at the same time, you want to increase caring behavior or helpful behavior or good behavior. And, of course, one of the best ways to increase behavior is to reward it in some way. So the idea is that we can't just always be focusing on negative behavior and how we're going to get rid of it, but let's also focus on how can we have more caring and respectful behavior. And so one way is to call attention to that. And I've primarily seen that type of thing used for staff, where they get a star or something that acknowledges that they did something that was very helpful or kind, and that's maybe posted in the employee's lounge or whatever. That kind of makes a big deal about their kind behavior. And my suggestion is to bring that to the level of the residents as well, that when a resident is observed doing something nice for another resident or nice for a staff member or whatever it is, to call attention to that and to make a big deal about it, so that you're not just making a big deal about problems but making a big deal about good things as well. And I think that can be helpful, and especially for those people who maybe are more cognitively intact and are doing bullying as a way to get control because they don't know, or get attention or whatever, because they don't really have any other skills to get that attention, and kind of seeing that, wow, you know, you be nice to somebody and people make a big deal. Wow, you know, that kind of, you know, it just kind of helps with that overall culture that, you know, here's another way that you can what do you say, be noticed. So
that's a great point. A great point. You can actually, you know, work, maybe if the person is seeing a psychologist also, there's a plug for psychology, but using, you know, and being able to say, hey, instead of doing that, why don't you try doing this? I bet you'd be great at it, and engaging them in a caring squad type of activity.
Yeah,
you
know, having an alternative.
Really change behavior.
Yeah, what I see a lot with people who are seen as bullies is trying to control everybody else and dictate, you know, who's going to participate in bingo or who's going to sit where in resident council meeting, and, you know, really wanting to be in charge and be in control and tell other people what to do, and kind of done in a negative way. And if we can take those skills and maybe help the person apply them in a more positive way, that's really good. And you'll see less bullying because they have another outlet for those skills. And your mention of psychology just brings a point to me that a lot of the research that I've done has been in assisted living, and a lot of the cases that I hear about are like in senior housing and independent living environments and stuff where they don't have really good access to mental health professionals. And then it's a lot more difficult because who's going to kind of do these interventions and lead these groups and organize this stuff? Whereas in the nursing home, you typically have a contract with a mental health provider who is coming in, you know, psychiatry, psychology. There's typically a social worker on staff. So nursing homes are blessed in a way because there's more mental health professionals that they can draw on to help with these issues. So that's one thing to be glad for.
Absolutely. And also I think that in assisted living, there may be possible that there are psychologists or other mental health professionals in the community that could be drawn in to help with some of these, getting some of these organized.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
a resource that may be available in the community.
Yes, there typically is, unless you're in just a very rural community, and there's always providers that you can bring in. And sometimes that can be a challenging for assisted living in terms of, you know, how are you going to pay for that. So there's got to be some creativity. Like the places that I work with, you know, they've been really creative in having psychology interns come in and those types of things. So looking at what's in the community and what can you draw on to be helpful.
Right. And I suppose for some, it could possibly be worked into an activities budget. That's another possibility.
Yeah, that's
so who would you see as then, like within the nursing home, for example, taking charge of some of the activities that you're mentioning, some of the task force and getting a caring squad going, things like that?
Again, that's going to vary from facility to facility, and I think there's like several different folks that could be involved. It's certainly a role for the social services director. It's certainly a role for the activity director. It's certainly a role for for anyone that is involved with kind of the behavioral management aspect of care, whether that's somebody from nursing, whether it's outside consultants. And I guess I don't see it as any one person's, you know, it has to be the activities. I don't necessarily see that, but I see people working together and maybe all of those folks involved. And then from facility to facility, it may be a different person who's kind of the leader.
Just to add another person that I can see being involved might be the in-service coordinator, training the staff on what to look for in terms of seeing bullying behavior, what would be bullying behavior. That could be another avenue.
Yeah.
So basically what you're saying is that it's, can be anybody and everybody as part of the team can be involved.
Definitely.
In trying
Definitely.
To reduce bullying.
Yeah, I think so.
Great. Well, thank you. You have been a wealth of information, and I really appreciate your being here with us today. So I'm going to close with that. That was Dr. Robin Boniface, assistant professor at the School of Social Work at Arizona State University, talking to us about how organizations can intervene to prevent senior bullying. And for more information, you can read her blog post that she wrote along with Marcia Frankel at mybetternursinghome.com. Thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.